It's November 11th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 57 of Free to Play, NurtureBeer.com's podcast about things and stuff. I'm Brian Belita, and I played in the Leafs today. I'm joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Hey guys, I am proud to introduce an exciting new innovation in podcasts. You know, the big problem with podcasts is I'm hearing from people who listen to other podcasts, presumably ours as well, is that
because ours has no problems.
Yeah, okay, it's perfect, but I'm going to make it more perfect. What we're going to do, like when podcasters start talking about a game for like 30 minutes at a time, and they only mention the game at the beginning of the discussion. So if you're not paying attention right then, you're completely shut out of the loop. So for today's discussion, I'll be repeating the name of the game constantly in the background while we discuss. I know this sounds
so intrusive. It's not like you're going to be injecting the name. You're just going to be chanting the name of the game. There's a repeating background track going now, like Mario Kart.
Well, yeah, that we can like introduce something like that later. I assume, you know, it's more of like an indie feel. You know, it sounds as like it's going to be annoying, but I promise it will not be obtrusive. After a while, you won't even notice it's there unless you know to listen to it. And we can just go ahead and start that right now.
I feel like the best way to do this would be for the three of us to talk about a game, deciding amongst ourselves that Mark can't see, right, and let Mark try to guess what it is.
Try to guess it exactly.
That's an excellent idea.
Imran Khan.
We are not talking about a game right now.
I'm talking about a
not talking
great...
about a game right now. We are not talking. Keep on. If you stop, then that it'll completely.
No, if I stop, it's funnier because then you got nothing. Speaking of not a game, I've been playing Tiny Death Star, which I don't understand at all.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, it's like, I remember why I don't like Tiny Tower, because it was crappy. And Tiny Tower is like that, but Star Wars.
I love the aesthetic and the idea behind the games, but I hate the free-to-play aspects. Like, here's my mentality when if I'm ever looking at a game on iOS, or I guess anything really. If it has a free-to-play aspect, or if I look at the app information and see there's in-app purchases for anything involving, like, you know, a certain number of coins, I'm not going to buy it. Because I don't want to buy in-app stuff, and that means that my experience of the game is going to be shitty.
That's pretty wise, but on the other hand, you also probably won't be playing many iOS games in the next couple of years.
No?
That doesn't seem like a huge issue.
Why won't I?
I think a lot of them are going to that free-to-play model.
There are many that are, but there are some good ones too.
If Plants vs. Zombies can betray you, anything can.
What's immensely frustrating
Peggle.
Is...
Oh, don't... Peggle, I can't wait to see what Peggle does.
It got delayed on the Xbox One.
Well, yeah, because it's on the Xbox One.
Yeah, but it got delayed a month.
Everything is delayed on the Xbox One. Everything.
It's a feature. And Matt Pierce.
So I was listening to the Cracked podcast today, and they mentioned the ending of Dinosaurs, and I was sad all day.
Is that the one where they, like, it becomes winter, and they're all looking out the window and saying everything's going to be fine?
Well, no. They know that the world is ending.
We're talking about
it ends with the dad trying to explain to the baby that they're all going to die.
We're talking about Knock the Mama Dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the saddest ending of any TV show I've ever seen.
It's pretty sad. That sort of reminds me, there's this one little kind of very simply hand-drawn comic that shows like the Brontosaurus is real, right?
What?
What? No, the Brontosaurus is not real.
Okay, what's it called now?
Yeah, it's not called anything. The Brontosaurus was like three different skeletons pasted together.
Well, anyways, okay, I guess this comic
book is... I think
actually, a lot of dinosaurs turn out to be that exact same way.
Well, anyways, for the purposes of this, we're just going to say it was a Brontosaurus. It was a big mama Brontosaurus and a baby Brontosaurus or something. And it's standing there, and you see this big comet kind of falling in the background, and the baby Brontosaurus looks up and goes, "What's that?" And the mama Brontosaurus looks at it and looks back at the baby Brontosaurus and says, "Just close your eyes." And then it ends. And I'm just like, it's the saddest thing.
Sad. They're actually raccoon skeletons, which is kind of strange.
Like, we should reboot Land Before Time. Except Grimdark.
Do you know that how many Land Before Time like DVDs there were?
I think,
there were like
15?
They're 15,
up, they're up to, yeah, I was going to say somewhere in the mid-10s.
Yeah, they became like a yearly franchise after a while. Just so quietly pumping out sequels constantly.
Okay, then here's the question. And I assume anyone who's seen Salty Bet can probably answer this better. Are there Land Before Time Mugen characters?
There
probably are, but not in Salty Bets. Now, there are...
Not.
Like,
why not?
All yeah. my money would be on Petrie every now, time.
There are, like, dinosaurs in Salty Bets. So, like, the Primal Rage characters will show up in a every once in a while, and there's one insane dinosaur just called Raptor who can summon like a stampede of other raptors, and it's basically impossible to stop because he is many raptors in one.
Right.
See, it needs to be Littlefoot who has like an impossible to hit hitbox, because that's movie accurate.
Right, exactly. That would be, and then he has it was Ducky? No, Petrie, the baby pterodactyl would just be flying around, and that's basically like his flying assault weapon.
He's actually just a duck skeleton. That's all the pterodactyls ever were. So
it also occurs to me that Ice Age is basically just Land Before Time.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, but there weren't actual dinosaurs in Ice Age, right?
There's yeah, it's them just like going Land Before Time, but let's just make it a couple of centuries later.
Do they fight a T-Rex in Ice Age?
No, they fight saber-toothed tigers.
Not nearly as threatening and or as large as T-Rexes.
You know who they should have fought was man, because man is the real monster.
Man is the real monster, right? Got it.
You know, the dinosaurs sitcom stuff, talking about the ending of that series, reminds me of the Halloween sequence in Garfield, where there was this week-long arc during Halloween one year in the comic strip Garfield. And in the middle of this arc, it was revealed that it's entirely possible that the entirety of the Garfield run is an abandoned shelter cat's insane, had gone insane, and everything about like Garfield and John, his master, and Opie, and all this stuff was just going on inside this insane cat's head as it sat there at the shelter unloved.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. You never heard about that? It was not supposed to be like a canon thing. It was just like sort of the fear of loneliness thing that he was pushing.
Yeah, but it wasn't anything like the writer of Garfield never explained that. So
I'm pretty sure he did.
He never addressed it inside the comic. It's like he never like came out and said like in the comic Garfield like turns and said, "It turns out I'm not actually a shelter cat and I really do live with John." It's like that was never really. It was implied heavily that was a real event. So if you're taking the canon of Garfield seriously, and I assure you, you probably should, then it's entirely possible that Garfield is a figment of an insane cat's imagination.
Wait, no, all right, I don't even want to.
Yeah, Jim Davis said that it was not meant to be taken as an actual
event
in Garfield.
That's outside of the universe, though. A kid's not going to read that stuff. He's not going to go.
A kid's not going to read Garfield.
I read Garfield.
Yeah.
He's not going to read Garfield now.
Well, back in the day, it's like, okay, sure.
Late 80s, I think kids had better things to do than read Garfield.
Well, he's not going to watch the Garfield TV show now either. It doesn't matter.
No, I watched the Garfield TV show when I was a kid, but I didn't read Sunday comics.
Oh, I don't read the comics. I just got the collections, I think. Maybe occasionally.
I think kids are now reading Homestuck. They're not Garfield.
I got a book of like insults and jokes, the Garfield branded, and one of them was like, "Are those your ears, or did two flying saucers crash into the side of your head?" That was one of the jokes. That was a Garfield joke.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, that's just totally an 80s comic and humor thing. You know, just sardonic and dark and sarcastic and just kind of just miserable and bitter.
Right. Well, I mean, like John's dating life.
Yeah.
Pretty sad.
Yeah. John's a sad man. I think the best thing to come of Garfield were the comics where they just removed Garfield's thought bubbles.
Yeah.
And just John.
There was one where they just removed Garfield entirely from the comics, right?
I think they, I know the ones I'm familiar with, you may be right. I know they removed Garfield or removed his thought bubbles.
I think there was another one that would just randomize three Garfield panels from any comic. So it
because
would just
every
mash.
Every Garfield comic is structurally exactly
right,
the same.
Right, right. So no matter pretty much what you get, there were. Yeah, it would pretty much work out. So anyway, let's talk about video games.
Do we have to? There's nothing games. Really happened.
No, I mean, I guess.
Let's talk about comics.
When does the Xbox Homestuck One come out?
The Xbox One comes out November 22nd.
The PlayStation 4 comes out way before then, an entire week.
Well, then. This week, in fact.
Wow.
Are you getting yours, Imran? You pre-ordered one.
Yeah, I pre-ordered. I think on Thursday I'm just going to go around to launch parties and either mock people or interview them. One of the two.
Yes, you should do that.
You see where Target's having a buy two, get one free sale for PlayStation.
For PlayStation 4?
So here's the problem 4. With that.
Yeah.
I don't know of two games I want.
Yeah, I was about to say, you get the entire collection, like just buy two games and you get the
You get Killzone, Knack, and Assassin's Creed, and the rest I'm pretty sure are sports games.
I mean, is there anything on like the downloadable store? I mean, have they been
Rezogun is a launch game. Okay. Contrast is a launch game.
Oh, Contrast looks interesting. That's on Steam, I think.
The download stuff has this problem where there's no way to justify that being on the PlayStation 4 instead of appearing like a year ago on just PlayStation Network or even on Vita. So
I don't know. Rezogun looks like something that could not reasonably be on the Vita.
I don't know, does it look that much more of a leap than Pac-Man Championship Edition DX? Because that's a lot of particles. I can't imagine Rezogun's putting out a lot more than that.
Man, Geometry Wars had a lot of particles, and that was like, God, how old is Geometry Wars now?
It was a launch game for the 360.
Okay. How old was Geometry Wars now?
That would be 8 years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess I could feasibly just buy all the games I quote-unquote want, but I'd rather just save the money and spend the extra $60 on Mario.
That's not really particles, Mark. That's like voxel buildings breaking apart.
Everything's voxels.
Yeah, voxel everything.
Well, I wasn't aware it was voxels. I mean, clearly voxels is the next generation. Voxels
are the next-gen Sid.
Yeah, this probably couldn't. I'm looking at it right now, and this is just everything just dissolving into a shower of pixels. Yeah, that probably could happen on PlayStation. Yeah, or voxels. Well, voxels are pixels. They are volumetric pixels.
So I'm gonna sideline us because Mark said pixels, and I want to talk about Broforce.
Broforce is amazing.
It's really cool. I don't know why it took me so long to catch wind of it, but I saw it. Somebody mentioned it somewhere or something. Maybe, no. There was I got
MindCon. Had a dream. Is like
MindCon, no. MindCon is going on or went on, and they were having this sale of indie games. It was called like MindCon Indies was the name of the site, and for a certain number of time, there were I don't know like 20 games that were on sale. And if you bought any of these games, it would enter you for, you know, winning all of the games or something like that. And so one of the games on there was Broforce, and it was for like $8. They had an in-browser like Unity demo or something like that. And I checked it out and I was really impressed. It's basically, I don't know. How would you describe it, Mark?
You want to say it's something like a Contra. So, I mean, it's very simple right now. And I assume that's because it's an alpha state. Presumably it has like the 4-player co-op.
Right. So it's in alpha right now. There's an online beta or alpha or whatever that you can buy into. But no, it's going to be like 4-player, going to have co-op. Mark's saying pixels remind me because it's got like super chunky pixel style as a lot of kind of indie games do right now, which is fine with me because the game looks gorgeous.
Yeah, well, it definitely has. It's not so much that it looks gorgeous. It just really buys into its own art style. I guess you could call it some kind of like weird combination of Minecraft and Contra. I mean, it's completely 2D, but your guns blow up everything in the environment, and you can use your guns to make new pathways.
Right, and as you might gather from the name Broforce, the game is just like super macho action-y. Like the characters are spoofs on 80s and 90s action heroes. Yeah. Like I forget the name of the blade.
Braid.
Yeah,
everybody's heads like starting off with some sort of form of bro in the name. So yeah. You got Braid. Because bro, because Braid.
Yeah.
So some of the characters, I assume they're going to rebalance this when the game comes out, but some of the characters are kind of useless because they're entirely melee based, and some of the enemies are flying around and they're entirely projectile based. So if you have the Matrix dude who all he can do is punch, you're kind of boned. Because you're just sitting at the bottom of the map and it's firing missiles at you and you're going to die.
But anyways, I mean, the guys behind the game, Free Lives, they're just, like, they call it a prototype. You know, it's bro-op. Prototype. Everything bro stuff, bro fort. Apparently you're going to be able to build a bro fort or something like that. And it was greenlit, so it will be dropping on Steam. But you can pick it up through the Humble store.
I'm not sure, like, if blowing your own passageways through the 2D space is the actual gameplay hook. But there's like, how many characters would you say are unlockable? Like at least a dozen, right?
Yeah, probably. I'd say it's like a dozen right now. As you're making your way through the levels, which are kind of, they're very quick levels. Almost like, I don't know, an arena, but not...
Like Metal Slug, little like
Yeah, exactly. A little chunk. And as you make your way through the levels, there are people in cages that you can free, and you basically become that character, and if that character dies, you go back a character. So it has some interesting, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, Nidhogg, where you kill thing, and then you become that thing, or if you die from the thing, you become it. I don't know. But so check it out. I was really, really surprised with it. Check out Broforce if you get the chance. Like I said, there's a free demo online. You can play it in your browser. You don't even have to worry about downloading anything. Go check it out. It's really fun. So I just wanted to talk about Broforce because pixels and stuff. But voxels. Actually, voxels. Oh, man. Voxels, love them so much. But actually, mentioning, speaking about Humble, they launched a store.
Which is weird because I'm not sure what the Humble store does that this theme store wasn't already doing. Well, I guess the money's just going directly to the publisher this time.
Well, or what, I mean, the Humble bundle was doing in general. I mean, if you buy anything through the Humble store right now, you can access, like, your library. But I think instead of, because it started off as just these bundles, this allows them to have stuff on sale, you know, single games. I guess, you know, it's another avenue of income for them.
But there's a minimum price. It's like, okay, like you can buy Gunpoint right now on sale, I guess, like $4. It's not like you can pay like $1 for a Gunpoint. You're paying the minimum price, and you can't pay more than the minimum price if you're insane. Now, I didn't actually buy it. Did you buy anything through the Humble store yet, Brian?
No.
Okay. Now I'm curious if it does that same thing where you can tell, hey, split the cost between the developer and.
I don't think so. Like I said, I think this is just strictly a store. I mean, that's, you know.
It seems weird because unless they can specifically like leverage better deals than Steam, I kind of would rather just have the stuff on Steam. You know,
they've got some really good deals. I mean, and their bundle is still serves that purpose of you know doing the whole charity. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation and all that stuff. So the Humble bundle part of that still operates for that reason. But their store, I said, I mean, that just allows them to have stuff, single items, if anybody wants to buy that. And they've got some really good deals. I mean, like you said, Gunpoint for $5. They've got the Swapper for $5, which you also
Rogue Legacy. Yeah. Rogue Legacy for like $7.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, it's a place that I already have a lot of games in the library just because, one, the bundles, but two, because there are a lot of indie games that's who they use for processing their payments.
Now, it should be noted that, like, all the games here do have Steam keys. So, I mean, it's not like you have to play it through there. They're in your Steam library.
And if they don't, they will when they get greenlit. Like Dungeon Dashers, which I've mentioned before, I bought that through, you know, it was a Humble store process payment. So there's a lot of stuff that uses Humble as their as their payment processing, and then it sits in your library. It's just that there's no piece of software like Steam for you to access all this. It's just a front end, or it's a web app that you could just log in and you can download your games from there. Which is, I mean, it's convenient. It's easy to do.
But, speaking of which, the current Humble bundle is the Humble WB bundle, and this is interesting to me because they put Arkham Asylum in the base bundle. Like you can pay. Arkham City.
Oh, no, you're right. Arkham, they're both there. My bad.
That's the weird part. Like, they put Arkham Asylum in the base bundle. You can pay, like, $1 and get, like, Arkham Asylum, Fear 2, Fear 3, and Lord of the Rings. Now, if you want to pay, like, $5 more, you can get Arkham City, Game of the Year. And that seems backwards to me. Like,
to you because you care about the quality of the game. Yeah. You've got to understand that the marketing people who work for WB care about how recent the game is.
I guess so. And the mainstream would look at that and say...
You've morphed from, like, I kind of don't like Arkham City to Arkham City is the worst thing ever.
I hate Arkham City so much.
See, it's weird because your opinion seems to change over time for reasons I can't understand. Like, I remember last year, you seemed totally okay with The Walking Dead as Game of the Year, and then I read your Game of the Generation article, and you hate that game.
I don't hate the game. I hate the fact that I had to vote for that stupid game because it's the only good game to come out that year.
You could have voted for anything you wanted.
Yeah, we would have ignored you.
Yeah, I know. That was the problem.
Well, it's not that we would have ignored him. It's that we
would have steamrolled him.
We would have, outvoted him.
Yeah, I would have been shut out. And I didn't have like a... Like now, like I would have a legitimate other contender. I'd say, no, it's Spec Ops. I played Spec Ops. It'd be Spec Ops. No.
Well, how much of your in your recent Game of the Generation articles and The Walking Dead whatnot is influenced by Season 2?
None of it. Like the fact that... I guess we can go ahead and say this, like spoilers, because this is completely out there, right? We can just say what's going on in season two.
Yeah, trailer's out there. We might as well.
Yeah, okay. So Clem's coming back. That doesn't bother me. I mean,
it actually bothers me quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the entire everything about like Gary Whitta in episode four, that bothered me because I didn't like that entire direction it went. Clem doesn't bother me so much. It's just, I don't know. Like it's hard for me to say this because I love Stanley Parable so much and I love Gone Home so much, and it's very hypocritical for me to go back and say I hated the Walking Dead, you know, for the same reasons, because in a way, like Gone Home and Stanley Parable are far less of a game than The Walking Dead was.
Well, it's the thing, you guys, I have to confess, I still haven't gotten around to playing Walking Dead. But the thing you guys always said about it wasn't that it wasn't enough of a game. It's that the game parts were really bad.
Yeah, the game parts are terrible. When the parts where it tries to be an action game, it just falls apart entirely. And it really feels weird. Why are these parts in this game?
Stanley Parable and Gone Home simply don't have those parts.
Yeah, the developers didn't feel the need to put those inside the game. So I guess it could just be a unity of vision thing.
Every game of the year we've chosen has had that compromise thing where we go, well, this part's really bad, but these other parts are way better.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Well, I mean, like Deus Ex. I mean, boss fights was pretty much
the end of that game.
Well, yeah. That's how it should be. I mean, if you're sitting there doing a critical review and you think the game is perfect, you've missed something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just put out the director's cut for Deus Ex Human Revolution, right? And didn't that do something to the bosses?
Yeah, it made all bosses stealthable. So you don't need to actually straight up fight them.
Now, my question is, like, did they fix the last level of that game? It's just not like this gunfest, because
I think that they made that stealthable, but not eminently so. Like, you still have to really work for it.
That's pretty amazing that they went back and did it. Well, I don't know about amazing, but it's good that they did.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the time when we first heard about this game, it was a Wii U port. And then I'm guessing sales and a bunch of other things made it so it was ported to everything else. So it made sense that they made such drastic changes to it, because that's the only way you can justify a 2-year late game.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, I mean, if they had launched that game without bosses, they probably would have gotten a lot of negative reviews for it. Now it doesn't matter so much anymore.
See, it wasn't that the bosses were the problem necessarily. It's just that the way you took them on was the problem. Even back then they admitted that, oh, well, we had to outsource those bosses because we didn't have time, which is why it didn't jive with anything else in the game.
They wanted to create these like, oh, we need this really cool set piece for this boss fight.
Well, you know what it felt like? It felt like they tried to create these bosses and integrate them as well as the Metal Gear Solid 3 bosses or any of the bosses in Metal Gear, because those bosses are actually part of the plot. It's not just like this huge thing that blocks your progress. It's like, this is a character important to the plot that you have to take out. And these were like three just really badass cyborgs that you knew you were going to have to deal with later on. So you had the anticipation that you're going to be able to fight them later on. It's going to be an amazing fight, and it was a complete letdown.
I will say, as much as the bosses sucked, it was still amazing to hack a turret and bring it like for 15 minutes just walking straight to the boss that turret in my arms, and then dropping it at the entrance and just waiting there while it shot him to death.
Yeah, it would have been interesting if there's a way to, I don't know, maybe just avoid the boss fights entirely. Like, if you could figure out some path. I don't know if that involves finding a different path or, you know, you need other ways.
They had those talking boss fights every so often where you had to make the right decisions to get someone to do the right thing.
Well, those were they
should have just done those with the bosses, too.
Well, they did that in the original Deus Ex. Like, you could go up to the big, heavy German cyborg and tell him the correct kill phrase, and he would just shut down entirely. And that entire boss fight you can just avoid 100%.
Yeah. This would have been like, I mean, since Jensen didn't have any of those, like, he wasn't really as big a super spy, I think, as JC was. In my opinion, anyway. Like, almost certainly because he was earlier on and didn't have, like, the really, what's the word I'm looking for, sophisticated augmentations.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been much better if he had to actually persuade and talk to people, and if you messed up, then it starts a fight.
Right. Well, I think also Jensen was portrayed as, like, I think like he was super professional. Obviously, everyone thought he was, you know, the best guy and a badass and stuff. But just
he always struck me more as a bruiser than a spy.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that comes out from like, you know, his lines of dialogue and the way, you know, he acts and his voice. He's like trying to, you know, he's trying to be this grungy, you know, down on his luck badass. And let us not forget,
he didn't ask for this.
He didn't ask for that Christmas sweater I gave him either.
But he got it.
But he got it. I'm going to need to do an interesting banner for Christmas since that comes up. I guess Thanksgiving first. I think last year I did the turkey game you could play in, Matt, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Super Turbo Turkey Puncher 3.
Yes, Super Turbo Turkey Puncher. God damn, that's hard to say.
Yeah. The arcade game you can play in Doom 3.
In Doom 3, thank you. Yeah, so... Yeah, so no, it's cool that they added that. But I don't know. Did we talk about Xbox One yet?
We mentioned it. Apparently, if you have one now, do not connect to the internet because...
You're a lousy thief and you'll be banned from Xbox Live forever, you lousy thief.
So the last thing I heard, and everything is rumor, but the last thing I heard was that after people kind of freaked out that Microsoft was banning people for... connecting early with their Xboxes, that Microsoft backtracked and said, no, they're just going to be prevented from logging in until launch day.
Well, yeah. There's prevented from logging in, then there's banning.
Yeah, I don't know.
Straight up would say your console is banned because that was the error message the guy got.
Right.
And I doubt if there was such fervor about it, they would have like, because they went back and were like, okay, now he'll be unbanned on launch day and we're inviting him to the Xbox launch party and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think if like, there was not a huge, like, what the fuck are you doing, Microsoft, thing, then they would have done nothing.
It could just be a failure of messaging. It's like, maybe they always intended for this to happen, but instead of, like, hey, we're just going to shut you off the servers right now, we can't let you on yet, the default message is, you're banned, go to hell.
Right, well, no, yeah, I think this was banning the consoles was their way of stopping people.
If it was just an easily misinterpreted error message and they all along planned to just ban the guy until launch day, they could have just come out and said that. The idea that they're inviting him to the launch party means that they had no idea people would react negatively to banning people for wanting your console.
So the story of like the Xbox launch and everything leading up to it is a hilarious backtracking on Microsoft's part anytime they make meet any resistance whatsoever.
So see, it's
it
not
fits into the pattern.
You could probably argue that the banning was a automatic thing.
Yeah,
probably.
But like the video he took being a DMCA'd or had a copyright claim on it for just an unboxing, like there was no actual game footage shown. He just took the stuff out of the box and put it on YouTube. That was a conscious decision on someone to go, we don't want this out there.
So what's funny is that Shuhei Yoshida from the Sony division confirmed that anybody who logs in, you know, with a PS4 before the actual release date will not get banned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sony did two unboxings.
Like, Sony's had their own controlled PR leak. Like, they have a guy who apparently like, oh, I have my own PS4 and I'm going to slowly leak out videos about it. And he turns out he's like the son of a Sony employee.
Well, they had like an actual Sony hardware engineer do a real honest-to-God teardown of the entire PS4.
Yeah.
And he did it, like, they did they did it in a well-lit room, and he was able to show you exactly how everything is dismantled without breaking it, because, you know, he's a hardware engineer for Sony. And it's like, if you just do this yourself, you don't have to worry about someone else doing it wrong.
Microsoft is kind of acting in the way that people think Nintendo acts, like the really harsh authoritarian.
We'll always say, although Nintendo does kind of get stupid with DMCA.
Yeah. So like, I feel like they're learning the wrong lessons here. Yeah. Like, this is not the direction to go. Go the other way.
Yeah. This is not an unearned reputation for Nintendo. That's
choose your own adventure.
Choose your own path. You want to talk about Stanley Parable?
I was gonna Nintendo real quick. We can talk about Swapnote.
Oh, oh yeah, man, so Swapnote got shut down 2 weeks ago.
Poor Nikki. Oh, Nikki.
Well, it got shut down.
Free Nikki.
Spot Pass. which means you can't get any like messages from the internet, but you can get messages through Street Pass, like by passing people directly.
Yeah.
And at, like
that ever has anyone ever had that happen with SwapNote?
Not that I recall, but I also have never checked it past the first day.
Yeah. So yeah, I got that and I said, "Ain't got, nobody got time for this."
So the reason at the time was then Nintendo was explaining people were using it inappropriately, which everyone just assumed, oh, I guess people were sending penises. What does Nintendo expect? And then about a week later, a story came out that there was an ongoing investigation that people, like actual rapists and sexual predators, were using SwapNote to entrap children.
And the amazing thing is, like, whenever Nintendo, like, we think they overreact to stuff, we always think, like, come on, Nintendo, they're not going to, like, be, like, child molesters, like, all over your systems and didn't stuff. You don't have to do this friend code garbage. You're paranoid. It's like, no, this actually happens. The first time they ever open anything up, the first thing that happens is child molesters come and use their system.
Didn't this happen kids. with the DS as well? I mean, wasn't there like a draw or a thing that you could, you know, draw with Pictochat. People that were in the same vicinity? Thank you, Pictochat, yeah.
But you had to be standing like right there to swap messages.
But wasn't there a hubbub about that?
You can there was a hubbub, but then people pointed out you have to be like in the same room as the person and accept messages.
So the thing about this is when Pokemon first came out, whenever you traded with somebody, it would give you this option, like, it doesn't matter if you knew them or there was someone online or whatever, it said, would you like to add this person as a friend? Which, you know, that's pretty standard internet gaming functionality.
Mm-hmm.
So about 2 weeks ago, there was a bit more than 2 weeks, there was a save patch for a part, like a bug where if you saved in a certain part of the city, that it would erase your save file. But with that save patch, that whole functionality with would you like to add this person as a friend disappeared. So if you draw a logical line from that to what happened with SpotPass, it seems like what happened was these people are, I guess, pedophiles started using Pokemon to add kids as friends and then communicated with them through SpotPass.
That's pretty scary.
About right.
Yeah.
Just like, you guys are parents, so... Like, I assume that might be some degree of concern for you that, like, this simple gaming for kids becomes kind of creepy.
Yeah. And it's one of those last places where you don't really know exactly what your kid is doing. It's not like there's 3DS monitoring software.
Right.
No. Well, even I've had the... You know, I've had other parents in the daycare that my son goes to, like, ask me about Minecraft. And I'm like, no, I think Minecraft is cool. It's, you know, it's just basically Legos. You know, the only thing you would really want to be worried about is they're playing online, because then somebody might build a giant dick out of sandblocks, or, you know, they can type
message,
whatever they want.
Hey, kid, here's my address.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Want to meet in real life? It'll be fun. Wink.
See, the problem with this one, and this is where it is actually Nintendo's fault, is that they built SpotPass in such a way that does not have accounts, so they can't really just ban the... like offending people. Now, when they get eventually put on Miiverse on there, Miiverse is all accounts, so they can ban people. But this, they just had to go, well, this is fucked, just burn it.
Burn it to the ground.
I'm cool with that. Burn it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because Miiverse is supposed to basically replace it anyway.
Yeah. Hopefully that comes. Last time I talked to somebody about it, it was just that it works, just they can't get it working alongside games.
And every time they tried to come into the 3DS?
Yeah.
Neat. And every time they like try to boot up Miiverse, it's just full of child predators. They just find it immediately, just everywhere, trying to get your kids.
I've been playing Wind Waker HD, and I loaded up the Miiverse, or not loaded up the Miiverse, because there's the feature in Wind Waker HD is that you can find bottles along the beaches, and like those have Miiverse posts in them. So the first one I get is like, so when Link goes up against a wall, you can sidle against it and crawl along the wall to wherever, and someone's like, oh, the button prompt says sidle, and the post said, God, Nintendo, you can't even get typos right? It's supposed to be slide.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Awesome.
That's
amazing. I love it when illiterate people take issues with your spelling.
Yeah. Well, I've probably mentioned this at some point, but like the posting of some proud mom who, you know, took an Instagram of her son's, you know, her 8-year-old son's letter, you know, little essay or something. And she's like, I'm so proud he used the right version of your, and it's the wrong version of your.
Love it.
Yeah. So real quick, back to Xbox One real quick. I'm looking at this post on Evil Avatar, and the install size of NBA 2K14 is 43 gigabytes, and Call of Duty Ghosts is 39.
Killzone is like 45, I think. Knack is 37.
Assassin's Creed is 20.
Isn't there another NBA? Is like NBA, was NBA Live?
Yeah, there's NBA Live.
It's 14, like 4 gig?
That's only 9 gigabytes, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, according
more
to this,
reasonable.
Yeah.
Now, it's weird because all these games that are being sold on disc are going to be sold on the store, right? On the online stores, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you'd think there'd be an incentive for Sony and Microsoft to, like, hey, guys, maybe we could compress this stuff down. We shouldn't be, like, putting 50 gigs of information through our pipes.
The most scandalous thing, but the graphics. Absolute most scandalous thing in video games right now is that they still use completely uncompressed textures or losslessly compressed textures. I mean, that's gotta stop.
Well, and you, I mean, you're kind of interested and know about this kind of stuff. Like, what was, I mean, how did, I mean, Rage was a pretty big game, right?
Mega textures.
Keep in mind that Rage, in theory, has a pixel. Like, every pixel is completely unique and addressable in Rage. Like, there are no repeated textures anywhere in the entire goddamn game, and it clocks in at 20 gigs.
Yeah.
And it's because all of the images are compressed in what's called Microsoft HD Photo. And apparently they would have gone with JPEG 2000, except that Microsoft gave them, like, working source code that they could just plug into DirectX.
Right.
But it's a wavelet-based, better than JPEG compression.
And was that, I mean, was it a comparable size for the console versions as well?
I assume so. I don't think they had different photos. They didn't change the size of... They could have gone with higher resolution textures on the PC, but I know that the limiting factor was distribution.
Yeah.
So apparently if they had gone with sharper textures, something that really taxed your video card, they were saying that the distribution would have been 100 gigs.
Has anything else used that engine, the ID engine or whatever?
No, nothing
I think
yet.
Doom 4 is supposed to be using it.
Supposed to, but that game is in development hell now.
Yeah.
Ironic. Yeah, when ZeniMax came in, they wanted to change just about everything about how id Software works, which makes sense because id Software doesn't work very well. But yeah, that basically put the brakes on that game entirely.
Yeah, that's a shame because they put a lot into making that engine, and it's a neat engine.
Yeah.
See, I don't think the problem necessarily is that disk sizes are too big because, I mean, at the end of the generation, disk sizes were too small.
Yeah.
Like, 360 just wasn't pushing it anymore. But
like halfway through the as soon as the PlayStation 4 came out, the 360 discs were too small. That's all there was to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of a leap though from a 9 gigabyte double-sided or dual-layer DVD to like 50 gigs. And that's,
right. Well, the issue I feel isn't that like they're having huge disk sizes, it's that they're having mandatory installs.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned this on Twitter, and I'm missing one critical fact. How big is the Xbox One hard drive?
500 for both One and PS4.
So if you got like all the games that you can get for it right now and do the mandatory installs, you're probably going
to be at 300 gigs.
Yeah.
People have done the math on this one.
Of course, it's a 500 gig physical hard drive. That doesn't mean there's 500 gigs of available.
Like 432 real life, and probably like, let's say, 30 of those are probably going to be OS reserved.
Are there multiple SKUs of consoles on this release?
Not this time.
No. You can replace the hard drive, at least on the PS4. I don't know about on the Xbox One.
Can you at least put like an offboard like hard drive?
Yeah, you can put any laptop hard drive in there.
No, I mean like you buy like a Western Digital MacBook or something.
No. The only system that supports external hard drives is the Wii U.
Yeah, as much as I want to roll my eyes at Nintendo having a 32 gig cap, and really only half of that is usable, I think.
Maybe. But, I feel like I have more than 16, but.
Oh, I don't know. I plugged in an external hard drive day one and haven't looked back. It's like, do I have space for this? Yes, I have 250 gigs of storage. But, I mean, combined with the fact that they're dealing with DVD sizes instead of, you know, Blu-ray sizes.
Oh, no, they have a 25 gig disc.
Oh,
nothing hits that. I think I like there's a couple that. Of games. I feel like Darksiders 2. Now there's something that like has 18 gigs. It's pretty absurd. Lego City is supposed to be pretty huge.
Yeah. You know, it didn't dawn on me until the other day when my wife and I were walking through Toys R Us that Lego City Undercover is based on the Lego City line of toys.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice. I feel like a moron.
One of those toys came with the game, I think.
And yeah, just one of the blocks came with just
a now there's
block.
A Lego movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
But like all the stuff in Lego City Undercover, you could just go out and buy as Lego toy sets. I had never even thought of that. I don't know why.
That's why all the Lego games are like gold mines.
Yeah. But this is like the first one that's not based on a licensed property, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, it just didn't dawn on me that it was a tie-in to...
Well, it's the first since, like, they started remaking Lego games. I think before when they had, like, Lego City Racing or something like that.
Well, there's like, probably some stupid, like, a Bionicle, like, yeah. game that had nothing to do with, like, the regular Lego stuff.
I remember Bionicle.
Yeah.
So, I gotta admit, one of the things I do like a lot about the Wii U, even though it seems like a really cheap way out... is that if I did run out of space, I could just go buy a 1 terabyte drive and plug it in. And
right.
just
Which technically it. You can also do with the PS4. It's just, I've not been keeping up on laptop hard drive prices, but for me, like, my impression is that 1 terabyte laptop hard drives are really expensive.
They are very expensive, but I don't know if they're necessarily more expensive than a 1 terabyte external drive. Because usually an external drive is a laptop drive coupled with a power supply.
Now, when you say laptop drives, you mean SSDs?
No, we mean like the 2.5-inch hard drives
okay,
that
so
are made
actually...
to fit inside a laptop. But no, okay. if you're talking about like external like hard drives, like a terabyte hard drive external costs like $80 maybe.
Yeah, if you get a big bulky one.
Yeah, they're pretty cheap. And SSD prices are dropping faster and faster, which is cool.
Yeah, they're never like enough. Yeah, they're never going to get to the point where like it's a viable option for.
Well, I mean, you can get the Wirecutter, which is a site that I follow, and they got good recommendations and deals and stuff. I think you can get like a 256 SSD for $108, which yes is more expensive than you know $80 for a terabyte. But
checking on it, it seems like for a terabyte of in that size, it's about $120.
It's not awful.
Or yeah, it's not so bad.
Around 100, if you can find them cheaper.
Yeah.
So that means by the time you're running out of space, it'll probably be pretty reasonable, right?
Yeah. But my problem is that like I feel like any system limitation that requires you to be an enthusiast to really work around it, it's just inherently flawed.
If the game installs weren't mandatory, I'd be like, oh, this isn't really a problem. But they are. Yeah.
Well, and yeah. And I don't know. I guess with consoles... isn't there an issue with you know pairing of the actual games and save files and what you're actually deleting? I thought there was I read something about confusion on that.
I know with the Vita they made it so the Vita has bubbles for all the games. Oh, like you put in a game and you create a save file, like those bubbles represent the game data and the save file. So if you delete a bubble, you delete both.
Yeah.
The only ways around this are if you're paying for PlayStation Plus, you can cloud save. Or if you back everything up to your computer, which backs up the game save file and the game.
Which means you've got to have all that space on your computer.
Right. Or, you know, spend the time backing it up, which is just, you know, I don't want to waste that much time all the time.
Yeah.
Well, backing up to the cloud is probably going to take longer than just putting it on a USB cord and move to your computer.
Well, what you're backing up to the cloud is just the save. It's not the whole game. I mean... If you do that nightly, that shouldn't really be a noticeable thing.
Yeah, but who does that nightly? It's not like my computer is mine.
You can't just schedule your Vita to.
I don't think you can.
Cloud saves nightly.
I mean,
it doesn't automatically sync trophies, so I don't know that it would automatically sync.
Yeah. I mean,
this is pathetic. Sony we're talking about. They're kind of not cognizant on the internet or. Modern anything, so
yeah. I mean, I'm not too worried about like you know when I get a PlayStation 4 about. I think with me the issue in the past was, you know, you buy the physical game and you have to install something and I don't know. I guess I never really wanted to delete things. I felt like it was a hassle because then I'd have to go back and reinstall it if I thought I was going to replay it. But I guess my gaming habits have shifted. Like I keep my Steam library on my computer down to the games that I'm actually playing, or at least I try to. So hopefully with lot of the console games now being downloadable and purchasable that way. I'll be fine just deleting them and then re-downloading them when I want them again.
Well, that brings back to my original point. It's how much cheaper is it for Microsoft and Sony to pay for the bandwidth costs of people having to re-download all these games? You know, that has to be expensive.
Depends. Right? Depends on if they have partnering contracts with ISPs.
Yeah.
Because then they're not paying for backbone data transfer.
Okay.
It depends on a lot of factors, but the last stat anything like this I've ever heard was that for Netflix to stream a movie to you costs them 5 cents.
Okay.
Like the whole damn movie. So I don't think that, and that was years ago. So I don't think that the cost to stream a game is really much of anything compared to the price you're paying for it.
Right.
It's certainly nothing compared to the price of the physical media.
Which just leaves you back, as long as you don't have to deal with bandwidth caps, then I guess it wouldn't be an issue.
Well, usually, yeah, it's the users who have to deal with bandwidth caps.
Yeah,
it's
not well, Microsoft. I don't know if a lot of Canada is like this, but I know Kalen from the platforms, he has like a monthly bandwidth cap that he kind of has to monitor and keep an eye on and stuff.
Well, Comcast is instituting bandwidth caps across the country now.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Good luck with that, Xbox owners.
I don't think they're going to go all the way with it. Like they've been couching in language like we're testing this or we're trying this exciting new initiative.
Well, I thought
people are going to complain.
I thought they've had it in place. It's just that I don't know. They weren't in super enforcing it or it wasn't super strict.
Yeah, they had like a. I mean, even my ISP charter has a quote unquote bandwidth cap, but they don't care that I go over it constantly.
Right, unless you like quadruple it or.
It does seem like the sort of thing though that next year, if there's a decent lineup for the Xbox One, a lot of people could go over a cap.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes from that. Because I don't know. I mean, sure, there are a lot of PC gamers, but I think with console gaming, of course, that'll increase the numbers of people downloading things. So,
like, how? Let's assume that Microsoft went with their initial Xbox One plans. Can you imagine how much that Comcast, like a week before the Xbox One release, announcing this new data cap would have fucked them over?
Well, I also wonder, it's like if it's such an integrated part of everyone's plan right now, it's for Steam, it's for Sony, everyone. This is going to be such a huge part of how they do business. Maybe it's in their best interest to just pay Comcast and Time Warner, pay them off.
You do that is that you'll never stop paying them off.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they want. They want more money.
Cable companies don't want net neutrality. They want to ransom companies who want to do things over the internet.
The answer is to move to South Korea and get 40 gigabyte speeds for $15 a month.
Yeah, or mainland Europe.
Right.
Or even
anywhere else civilized.
I guess Google Fiber is a thing, right? Is it Texas or Tennessee that
Kansas City,
okay.
I guess what we really need to do is just wait for Gabe Newell to solve this by releasing his own ISP, which would be amazing and great with your Steam box.
Oh, Jesus. Right.
By the way, do you know why Kansas City? Because Kansas City used to be the headquarters of Sprint, and Sprint used to be a backbone provider.
So all Kansas that wire City, is just there.
Yeah, Kansas City is disgustingly connected to the internet. it's insane how much bandwidth comes and goes in and out of that city. But it's not being used by the city. So deciding to make that the first place where you set up Google Fiber means that at least you're connecting to the internet in a place that can give you some decent performance.
Yeah, I imagine that's a big impediment to Google Fiber everywhere else, is that they have to do things with like fundamental infrastructure.
Yeah, like I could get a fiber connection to my local loop, and then that's got to go to something in the New York metro area, which sucks ass.
Just our shitty, shitty, shitty infrastructure.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's take a break.
Break.
We're back, and Mark assumed we were doing it.
I always assume we're doing it at all times.
It leads to many awkward openings to this podcast.
Like peeling bananas.
That actually might make it in as like part of the post-music thing.
That's fine with me.
I sometimes sneak those things in. I'm not sure if anyone actually checks.
Stay after the credits.
Like the Marvel things. Right, has anyone like seen Thor? Things. Is no, Thor no. good?
I have heard that Thor is enjoyable action.
I'm sure it's a fun Thor movie.
That would make it better than Thor 1, because Thor 1 was nothing.
Yes, I've heard that it's better than Thor 1.
The thing is, like, the people who are saying good things about Thor are the people who are so totally invested in the Marvel movies that they can't not stop watching the Marvel movies at this point. So I think it may be Stockholm Syndrome.
I think I saw someone at Twitter saying that they saw a headline that was like, this Thor movie was thoroughly absorbing, or like I was absorbed into this movie.
Then just like block this person and remove them from your life entirely.
No, he was commenting on how
he was commenting
angry he was that somebody was paid to write that headline.
Yeah.
See, I thought we got all the Thor puns out like years ago.
It's hard to make Thor puns. It's hard to fit Norse into English.
I mean, like, Natalie Portman's pregnant. She must feel really Thor.
Yeah.
See, that made sense years ago when she was pregnant and in Thor.
But all you can do is say Thor and mean sore. And that's
That's it. That's all you can do.
That's not fun. Well,
what we could do is just re-Thor all these jokes. See what I did there?
No, I don't. Retire?
Restore and Thor. Re-Thor.
No. That one doesn't work.
Okay.
No. Have there been any good Thor video games?
There was a DS game that was okay.
There was a Way Forward game, if I remember.
Yeah, that was a DS game. Yeah.
It's hard to make good video games from, you know, characters like Thor, who is...
You said that exact same thing about Thor puns not but 10 seconds ago.
Well, no, Thor puns don't work because...
So basically, it's hard to make good Thor anything.
But no, Thor... It's hard
Thor
to make
sucks.
Thor
sucks. We...
And keep them, like, in line with Marvel.
Yeah.
Because Marvel basically has Thor... They've embraced the idea of Thor being a god at this point.
God.
Well, it's the same issue where you can't make a good Superman video game. Because it's like, you can't put him in a threatening situation, and if you do that much damage, then he's destroyed an entire city, and the entire point is he's supposed to save
Are you going to play a Thor game where he can be killed by sewer rats when you just read in the comic that he threw his hammer around the sun and threw a guy?
The 2007 Superman game by EA was actually really close to good. It's just it had the Assassin's Creed 1 problem where they have a good concept and just couldn't make a game around it. Because like that was a thing where like Superman himself had no health bar, but the city did.
Right.
So you couldn't just go fuck everything up.
Right.
Good idea.
Tactical destruction.
Yeah, but there was no actual design to it.
But meanwhile, there's ways to make like more street-level superheroes into good video games.
Yeah.
It's just that nobody has decided just... outright copy Batman Arkham.
Yet. Did you guys hear that Marvel is bringing 5 series to Netflix?
Yeah, they're making the Defenders, but they're first separating them out in different shows.
Yeah, and then they culminate into one. Or is it 4 different heroes, and then the 5th series is the culmination, or 5, and then the 6th series, or something like that?
I don't know enough about the Defenders to say.
Because it's Iron Fist. All I know is Iron Fist, because I love Iron Fist. Luke Cage. Jessica Jones?
Yeah, Jessica Jones.
And I forget who the other one was.
So it's I'm not even sure who the Defenders are, because that just sounds like the new Avengers.
As far as I know, they're like the Avengers with Tood.
Is that like,
sort of.
Like superpowered dudes, more like cosmically superpowered guys, because the people you're talking about sound like more like martial arts fighters.
They were all B-listers, but they were... Well, Luke Cage and Iron Fist go back a real long ways, because they were both kind of horrible stereotypes from the 70s.
Yeah. But Iron Fist is a white guy now. So
he was a white guy back then, too.
Was he?
Yeah, he was a Great White Hope sort of character. White guy goes to Asia, learns martial arts, is better than every Asian.
He's Batman. Yeah.
Isn't that also Tom
Cruise.
Isn't that also the backstory of like Wolverine?
Sort of. At least Wolverine, you could... bullshit the idea that he had 3 or 4 lifetimes to learn all that stuff. But at any rate, Luke Cage formed Heroes for Hire, which was based around the idea that heroes should not have to be destitute. And that, I guess, eventually became the Defenders? I'm not sure. They were like legitimately B-list in the 80s, which means I don't know that much about them.
Yeah. I'm going to assume that that heroes shouldn't be destitute, and they're for hire means that they're shaking down villains and offering them protection rackets, or they'll just go into villains, just beat the shit out of them.
Just taking the villains.
They should work out a deal where they get like 5% of whatever they save.
I don't know.
I think it would totally make sense.
I think that was part of the plot of New Avengers when they took the people from Heroes for Hire and made them Avengers, is that they were put on a government salary.
I think that would create a situation where like the heroes would try to like stage robberies or whatever. Like,
right? Not what is that? It's not obviously not Stockholm syndrome, but what is the
There's that situation where like firemen will like light fires just so they have fires to fight.
Are you talking about like Munchausens?
Thank you, Munchausens. Yes.
Well, I was talking about Syndrome from The Incredibles, who created a robot to destroy the city. So,
this Netflix thing makes me think that Marvel, even they realize that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of shitty. They're just throwing it under the bus now.
I think I watched the first two episodes, and it was like, you know, superhero stuff, but the CW version.
Of the six episodes I've seen, only one has been legitimately entertaining.
How you call that the CW version of superheroes when the CW has had like three superhero shows.
Yeah, like Smallville, Arrow, and all
that
stuff.
That's true. That's a fair point. But I love Coulson, so.
Yeah. Actually, it bothers me that Coulson's back. I'm not
bothered by that because the implication is that Nick Cage is a real dirty badass.
Well, yeah. Like the implication in the show is that like he's back. Like some dark magic or some dark science brought him back, but I think that's stupid.
Wait, Nick
like
Cage
this
Nick
bothers
Fury?
You, and I don't understand why this bothers you, considering the level of power that we know exists in the Marvel universe.
Because
the stupid shit that just happens constantly.
You can only ask the audience to make so many leaps of disbelief, and then at some point, like it just breaks. And for me, this is the break point. It was better when he was dead.
Well, then it was going to break instantly for you because it's a comic book universe and this stuff is going to happen.
See, no, but when I go into a Marvel movie, I understand that there are gods and there are spider people and then there's a guy who builds a robot suit. That's fine. I go in accepting that idea. When you take a character that you've killed already and just bring him back and make it a mystery, I think that's boring. I think it's rote at best and stupid at worst.
I think if you have the real and actual like God of Thunder versus the real and actual God of Lies and Trickery, it's just you have to accept everything else.
No, I don't think you have to. I think that's a cop-out excuse.
I was just under the impression that Nick Fury just lied to everyone.
No,
and he was never dead.
There's been a couple of things now where like he shows the scar and
he was shot through the chest. There was a hole through him.
And he's running his own physical test that his doctors don't want him to do because to find out what happened to him because he doesn't feel right.
Oh, that's kind of lame.
Yep.
They could have just been like, yeah, Nick Fury is the ultimate pragmatist.
I think as I get older, I'm getting more and more impatient with, like, you have to accept this as the logical thing writing. We were talking about Walking Dead earlier, that, okay, maybe it makes sense that they continue with Clem because it's season two of The Walking Dead. On the other hand, that's the easiest, most obvious way to go, so I'm disappointed that people who wrote a good story can't write a good season two from the get-go.
I really hope that, like, in 10 years, they reveal that Nick Fury is actually a wizard. That's just it. He's just a wizard.
My hope is that they reveal Nick Fury was Sam Jackson the entire time. He was just putting on, like, Nick Fury clothes and pretending to be in charge and everything just followed him. Like,
under his eye patch, he has a gem. That's the source of his scandal.
Like, they rip off the eye patch. It's just a normal eye. It's like, he's not Nick Fury at all.
Son of a bitch.
He's doing that whole pirate thing where you have, like, night vision in the other eye.
Right, yeah, exactly. Wasn't there, like, a Metal Gear Solid eye patch thing?
Like, there was...
Yeah. He has an eye patch on the right eye, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, so fucking.
So I love that we're all arguing about like this Marvel thing that we're not watching anyway.
Yeah,
I watch it. It's background noise at best, though.
Yeah,
I just have an issue with television shows that don't just start being good like in the first episode.
Yeah,
it's like I don't have patience for the network TV bullshit anymore.
In fairness, it's a Joss Whedon show, so and those tend to get better after season one.
Yeah,
but like. We have many examples of good shows that start good like, in season one.
This Josh asshole Whedon gave us the Dollhouse. Come on, we can't just keep accepting
it. Dollhouse.
You're sick.
I could, but I'm going to say this, that I like Dollhouse because I was led to believe that it was pure poison. And it was better than that.
Yeah.
You know,
sometimes, expectations do, like, I was led to believe Final Fantasy 13 would be the worst thing ever, and it was just a bad game.
Yeah.
So I kind of liked it.
So that's what we should do. That's our new service.
We
we'll just create these expectations for everybody. We'll just like review, we'll just become the biggest review site on the internet and just, we'll just review everything shittily so people actually start enjoying fucking video games and drop all the bullshit.
I'll start. Arkham Origins, which I've been playing, there's a whole lot of that game where you're just doing nothing. Like, you know how they have it set up so it's one night and that you're going to be fighting all these 10 assassins.
It's a night full of action and adventure.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be well-paced at the boss fight in every real area. Yeah. But there's this point between where you fight Deathstroke and, I don't know, I haven't gotten to the next assassin after that, but it's been like 2 hours.
Now, let me ask you, like, he's doing this on, like, Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to assume there's, like a timer. Does a timer run in real time? Okay.
It's the same as the previous Arkham games, where it all takes place over one night.
Right, I was going to ask. So you can just stand there and idle for 24 hours and, yeah.
But, like, okay, so the very first thing you do after you fight Deathstroke is you go to Black Mask's apartment and you find out he's been killed. And this is early, early on in the game. And you piece up this forensic stuff, like, you're trying to find, okay, so somebody was shot here, and there's this woman that's hanging up by the chandelier, and she was shot through the heart. And so you're trying to figure this out, and then you have to run the DNA, you have to go to the National Crime Database, which is like a 2-hour process of like going through the police department and going through the sewers and all that stuff. And I guess I'm going to spoil this for people, but it's not a huge spoiler. It was the fucking Joker.
No.
And the game acts like this is a huge thing that you should be really surprised about.
What? It was like, Ganon all along.
But like literally the first time you hear about the Joker is like right before you go to the Black Mask department. So you know, obviously, this was the Joker. This is exactly what he would do.
Now, is this just trying to be sold as, like, his first adventure with the Joker? Like, his first encounter with him?
Yeah, he doesn't know who the Joker is. He's never met him before. He's heard some rumors, and they can't find any reference to him in crime databases.
Like, this would be a lot more impactful if the Dark Knight didn't already exist and do this.
Yeah. I guess I get where they were trapped is you can't really do an Arkham game without the Joker, and
I think maybe you can try. It's like, there's like a bunch of villains. It's like even the Nolan movies, like they only use the Joker once. Admittedly, it's because he died in the second.
No, I do feel like this game tries to trade on the Nolan movies a little bit too, because like Falcone was introduced, and I don't recall him in any other Arkham game.
Well, it was in the cartoon series, I think.
He was in the cartoon and the movies.
Yeah. Doing an Arkham game without Joker is like doing a Walking Dead game without Clem.
there's always a sociopath and a little girl and a lighthouse.
See, I don't feel like Joker should be like I don't feel he should be introduced this early if he's in, like, if you had to put him in there, he should be this, like, last-minute thing, like he was in the first Nolan movie. Like, we got this card, this guy's fucked up.
Yeah. Well, that's the issue video games always have. It's like, they can't do pacing well, and they can't do reveals very well, because at the end of the day, they can't support, I don't know, like, more sophisticated audiences. They feel like they have to write to teenage boys and people who just are not going to be patient enough to wait for the big Joker reveal.
Well, they can, and some do.
Yeah, sure, they can if they want to, but the pressure is for them to just give the payoff immediately.
See, if it were me, what I would have done is I would have had it so the Joker had just put on Black Mask's mask and was pretending to be him for most of the game. Because you don't actually interact with Black Mask, and like Batman himself doesn't interact with Black Mask that much. He's a mob boss. So it would have been smart to have like just that be a reveal late in the game. But instead
you said at some point you find Black Mask dead or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, so who's running this whole fucking thing? And at the end you get the Joker card or whatever.
Yeah, that would have been a really cool thing. But instead they just went like, oh, it's the Joker. I'm sure I'm going to have to fight him at some point.
That's also been a weird thing with the Joker, like just in general. He's this unstable sociopath who can't be trusted for anything. He has these amazing organizational skills where he can run a criminal enterprise like no one.
Well, he's supposed to be like a genius like Batman, just crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's crazy. He shouldn't have organizational skills. He shouldn't be an amazing manager. You know? I don't know.
It's one of those things where like Batman has so many villains that are just blank, like Batman but blank.
Yeah.
So like you have Ra's al Ghul, which is Batman if he went the path of evil. Then you have Joker, which is Batman but crazy, and also the path of evil.
And yeah. I mean, even Bane is you yeah. know, he's like Batman, but
born evil, or yeah. like was raised to end up evil.
Yeah,
it's like
I find it funny that Bane and Javert have the same origin story from Les Mis. Like, you don't know me. I was born inside a prison. Like, oh, okay. So you're Bane?
That would have been a good crossover.
That would have been. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, maybe that. I'm hoping that game will pick up more because there's only so many more assassins I can fight. And I haven't fought barely any of them. But the one I did fight was cool. So hoping for better.
So better boss fights than the original, than the first two games?
I mean, it already has better boss fights than the original because I fought Crocodile at the beginning of the game and he didn't just run at you and then you dodged.
Right.
He actually did things. And then I fought Deathstroke, which is like, mechanically, wasn't that interesting. Like, it wasn't Bayonetta or anything, but it looked cool, which is really all you can ask for.
Yeah. You want to see Batman doing cool things.
Yeah. And I've also been playing Wind Waker HD. And that game is
Now, who's the bad guy in Wind Waker HD?
Ganondorf. Or a bird for the first hour.
Fuck. Ganon again.
But that game looks really, really pretty. Like, it looks prettier than a lot of games do today. Matt, how far did you get?
In the HD remake?
Yeah.
Right now I've finished the Earth Temple with Medley, and I'm about to go to the other temple with what's-his-face from the tree village.
Then you're way past what I want to talk about, which is the first boss of Dragon Roost, which was this like armored scorpion sitting in a lava pit.
Oh yeah.
And when you finally break off his armor, it becomes this like amazing Technicolor dream where like everything's flashing and bright neon lights are coming out of his body. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And that's like, that is a proof of like art style over technical prowess I've ever seen.
What's amazing to me about that game is that, as beautiful as it is now, almost all of those effects were also done on the GameCube.
Yeah.
Like, almost all of them. There's very little that's really added. And like, they did it all without shaders.
The things resolution add to that game is that you can tell what pictures look like now. Like, the grandma has pictures of Link and Errol on the wall, which were just kind of blurry things before.
Yeah, and now when you see it, you're like, oh my god, that's actually tear-jerking.
Yeah.
Now, is this a system of it having an art style, or is it because it's cel-shaded? Now, immediately, being cel-shaded is the art style, but how much of that is added just because cel-shading, which always looks good, even since, like, the PlayStation 1?
I've seen cel-shaded games getting the HD upport, and maybe they just didn't get as much of one as Wind Waker HD did, but they don't look nearly this good.
Yeah, they added some stuff to Wind Waker's graphics engine to make it work a little better. Like, things cast shadows now. And that helps a lot. And when things are far away, the shadows are really soft. So that really adds to that cartoon effect. And they've also added in ambient occlusion. So when you're in shadow, like completely in shadow, things don't look so flat anymore. Like you actually stand out from your background a little.
Though it is funny because widescreen screen kind of breaks a few of the puzzles. Because there's like that part where right after Tingle tells you that you should go back into the behind this prison cell to go look for the picto box. Like, if you take a wrong turn left or right, you might end up in a trap and a rat will drop you back into the ocean. You can actually see where those wrong turns are because the floor is different now, because the screen is wider.
Oh no, I could see that in the old version.
Could you?
You're a wizard.
Then how does that work? Like, shouldn't you technically have more viewing area now?
Maybe you do, but it was still visible in the old one.
Was the original game letterboxed in any way?
Only when you're crawling, it is.
Is it?
Yeah. It's it's much more visible now, mind you. But that was always a trick you could do. There's just one rat where he's recessed farther, so you could actually get stuck there. But the other ones, yeah, you can see the floor change color where the rats are standing.
In terms of gameplay improvements, like, most of that stuff is only going to be noticeable to someone who has played the game or played the hell out of the game before, except for, like, faster sailing is more obvious.
Tingle's quest requires less money, thank God.
They changed the way that you control the wind now, which is a little strange to me.
Yeah, like, that annoys me.
Like, before, when you played the Song of the Wind and, like, you would choose your wind direction, like, basically a circle would appear on screen and you pressed, like, the analog stick in the direction you wanted the wind to go. Now it's like a cursor that you move. And it's like, it feels like such a weird and unnecessary change.
Oh, the one thing they changed that I really like is that it doesn't start counting beats on the Wind Waker, like when you're actually playing something on the Wind Waker. It doesn't start counting beats until you hit a button.
Yeah. So you're not going to get like a blank beat for the first one. But also, and the UI is like a lot better to control now and a lot better to use.
And the second screen has all of your songs so that you can look down if you get one.
Otherwise, like, it's still a really good game, but it's also still a 2003 game in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Like I was saying about that before, if you had never played that game, hell yes, it's worth $50.
Yeah.
But if you played it, maybe? Depends on how much you like Zelda.
When I was younger, I didn't realize how obvious the missing dungeons were until, like, I played it again now. It's like, the bird, you go to that island, and, like, where Jabun is supposed to be, and the bird guy comes, and I was like, yep, he's gone, not a trace left. And then immediately says, by the way, he's on Outside Island.
Yeah.
So go there. It's like, that was really simple.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. Like, I don't know how to get to this into this fire thing, but there's a fish here who's going to tell me about the island.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard there's something 3 squares west and 1 square north that can freeze anything.
Supposedly, Link Between Worlds does not have any tutorials, which I'm excited about.
I don't know how excited I am for that.
It looks really good. Part of it is that I don't have that much A Link to the Past nostalgia.
Yeah. Same here.
I forget which of you had the wife that was like super into Link to the Past.
That would be me.
Yeah. So is she super excited for it, or...?
She is. She's waiting for that download to be enabled.
but that's all I've been playing.
Oh, wait, you meant?
Yeah, I guess I should jump in, because all I really have been playing is Wind Waker HD, a little bit more of Stanley Parable, and I actually, stupidly, instead of playing any of the Game of the Year games I have lined up to play, started a new save file in Skyward Sword. It's just one of those things where I wanted to try it again because I realized that, you know, I've beaten Twilight Princess 3 or 4 times now, Wind Waker 3 or 4 times, and Skyward Sword, I never got through it. And it's because, you know, it took me a long... First of all, that game is insanely long.
Yep, about 40 hours.
It is... It's absolutely indefensible how long it takes to do anything in that game. Everything is this long, drawn-out chore for no reason. But on top of that, you know, it took me about 6 months to get, like, halfway through the game, and then baby. So,
Right. Yeah,
that put an end to my first attempt to play it. So, now that I have a more structured day, I figured I'd give it a shot. But, you know, I think I might have to put it on bricks again so that I can actually get some Game of the Year gameplay in.
Yeah, it's still a trip.
How far did you get to a Stanley Parable? Like, how many endings did you get?
I'm going to have to say, like, 7 or 8 endings.
Okay.
Got a bunch of them. Did you get the apartment ending?
Yes.
Did you get the alternate for that, if you don't answer the phone?
No, I did not. Now I have to go back in. I did something to the phone and got a different ending from the ending.
Oh, the one after that where he figures out you're a real person?
You punched the phone.
Yeah, that's a great ending.
I didn't punch the phone. I did something else to the phone. I unplugged the phone.
Yeah. If you haven't done that ending yet, Brian, do it.
Yeah,
if you have no idea where the phone is, you gotta find the phone.
Yeah, I need to go through some more of the endings.
Yeah. The one you really need to do, first of all, is the escape one.
Yeah, I did that one. That's where you go into the big room at the end and the big door opens.
Yeah, but pay attention to that, because all of the stuff where they show you the making of the game gives you hints on where to find other endings.
Hmm. I'll do that.
Imran, have you played it yet?
Nope. I've barely had time to play the games I'm actually playing.
Yeah. Just sit down for like 2 hours and you'll get a ton of the endings for it.
Yeah. You say that, but like, sitting down for like 2 hours is such a rare opportunity these days. I'm really can't wait for Thanksgiving because I'm gonna take my desktop computer with me to my parents' house.
Nice.
And just sit there and play video games until it's time to eat.
Well, if you want to get an idea what the flavor of the game is like, watch the Giant Bomb Quick Look, because they intentionally don't spoil much. They only go through two endings, and they're two like very straightforward endings, but it'll give you an idea of what the flavor of that game is.
See, I know I want to play it. It's not, I don't have to be convinced. Starting a new thing right now is when I have other things to play is like, I feel bad that I'm not finishing Ace Attorney, even though I'm so hyped for that game.
I've heard that's incredibly long.
You'll get to it eventually.
Yep. Because I started my Game of the Year list yesterday. Like, in that I put down a list of everything I've played and just started cutting away at things that aren't going to make it. And I ended up with about 15, 16 games. So we'll see how that shakes out by the end of the year.
And you're not done with games this year. It's entirely possible that Assassin's Creed 4 is a very good video game.
There's at least two games I have not played that have a decent chance at making the list.
Yeah. For me, I've still got Gran Turismo and a Mario platformer on the way.
Yeah, Mario's one of the ones that might make it or might not. Who knows?
And a Zelda. I mean, it's a pretty big end of the year.
It's been a very big, pretty big year. I mean, since it's been a crazy year so far.
It has been. So I've still been playing Bioshock Infinite, and Broforce, and not much else new for now. No.
How far are you in Bioshock now?
Let's see. I just am trying to.
Yeah, that's Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah, that's the gun dealer.
Okay.
That's the part of the game I actually legitimately don't like.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that when you're down in the cell and you find spoilers, whatever. The body of the gunsmith. And then you're like, oh, an alternate reality. Those two, you know, crazy people who I have to assume are Elizabeth's mom and dad. I don't fucking know. They show up.
The story kind of starts falling apart a little bit there.
Not even story-wise, like gameplay-wise, that part's a bummer. Because it's just going around that like tower and around that one area over and over again.
Yeah. You're just going around in the courtyard exploring like Fink Town or whatever.
And occasionally enemies will spawn there, and then you have to fight them, and then like, you go further.
Yeah, like really tough enemies too. It's like the fucking handyman will show up constantly back there, or dudes with rocket launchers.
Yeah, I haven't yet, but I'm very tempted just to put it onto easy mode, just so I complete the game, experience the story.
If you feel like you're getting to the point where like you might quit because you don't like how it's playing, go ahead and put it on easy.
That's not even it. Like I can play a hard shooter game. I can play Quake through Deathmatch. I can kill things with, you know, when I'm shooting guns. So
yeah, but is it the sort of game where you're sitting there going through all these battles and you're like, if everybody died with half the bullets, this would be a lot faster. Just faster.
It's not about capability to me. Like, I'm capable of playing a lot of games on like really hard difficulties, but I don't want to all the time.
Right, exactly.
It's like I enjoyed Bioshock Infinite's gameplay, but I'm crazy. But the big problem with me with that gameplay was the areas were so open that you're constantly getting hit from directions you didn't know what the hell was going on, and by the time you realized you were getting hit, you were dead.
It's Battlefield Syndrome.
Right, that was the main gameplay in that game. It's the game of who's shooting me now.
Yep.
It turns out it's that guy up there.
And he's got a rocket launcher and you're fucked. Yep. So, yeah.
Yep, so I'm playing that, but it's coming along nicely. I had the day off today unexpectedly, so I got to put a good couple hours in that got me there. So I don't know how much longer I've left. If I'm going off just a little like view boxes, the little movies, I'm like maybe a little over halfway done.
I can't tell if like you're either halfway done or like two-thirds of the way through.
Yeah.
It's closer to half than the beginning, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, so that's pretty much it for me.
I've been turning on my Spelunky box and using my Spelunky controller to play Spelunky, and that's what I've been doing because my life is now fucking Spelunky.
Yeah, I saw that you managed to to put it down, though, because obviously you put up your posts on IntroBeer.com.
Yeah, and I had to take apart my controller. I had to hide my battery pack from my 360 controller.
Ask a roommate, hide this from me.
No, that wouldn't be good, because then he'd sell it. I'd never see that thing again.
Fuck, sounds like you need new roommates.
Your roommate is the worst.
Yeah. My roommate is the worst. I don't know. I've been kind of tempted to go to Target and take advantage of the buy two, get one free sale a little bit. So apparently it's crazy good because everything, like even pre-order stuff, you can get. So,
if it's in their system, they'll let you. But there's a lot of things that aren't in their system, like Mario and Zelda aren't in their system, despite coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's like I kind of want to play Assassin's Creed 4, but it's like there's not like anything new right now that I want to play until like Zelda comes out for the 3DS.
See, if I hadn't bought any game so far this year, a buy two, get one free sale would be amazing.
Yeah.
But like keeping current on games means by the end of the year, you're struggling to think of three games.
It is. It's the same issue I had with the Toys R Us sale, which I didn't actually take part in this year at all, because at the window that they had it, there was just nothing I didn't already own that I wanted. So, yeah, that's basically what I've been playing, really. Being a log Broforce, played through that, what you can play through that, because there's like maybe 12 different levels.
If even that, yeah.
Is it early access or not even on Steam yet?
It's greenlit. It is greenlit, but if you buy now, you'll get access to the alpha.
Yeah, it does make me. The thing I don't like about early access stuff is that I greatly fear you're going to buy the video game, and then by the time the video game is released, you're sick of it. So
well, either you'll be sick of it, or like your save won't carry over or something like that.
Like I see a bunch of people play Mercenary Kings to death.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, what are you going to do when the game actually comes out? It's like,
yeah. I want to experience Mercenary Kings in its full glory. I don't want to play it right now.
Yeah.
In still working on way.
I think the one thing I've played through to completion of what they have now on early access is Dungeon Dashers. And that's like, I don't know, maybe 12 to 15 levels, but it there's definitely more like that's supposed to come after that. But no, I don't think I'll get sick of that game.
I did maybe notice like the beautiful thing about Spelunky is you know how to play it within the first 30 seconds. It's the same thing about Broforce. There are a lot of games like in my like back, not in the back catalog, but still actually finished that I want to go back and visit. Like I want to go back and visit Metal Gear Rising because I thought that was an amazing video game. And but
the DLC is free now, so
yeah. So I should get it to go ahead and download that. But I know it's going to take me like a long time to get back into that game to relearn those systems. Or I can just play Spelunky and it's instant and I know how to play it within 30 seconds. If I go back and play Metal Gear Solid Rising again, I would have to start at the very beginning all over again and not be very good at the game for the first 6 hours, probably?
Well, you're in luck, because the DLC has different characters and they don't play the same.
Okay, so yeah, I should probably get that. I need to make some space to my PS3 hard drive, though. So yeah, I need to get that. So that's it.
Video games.
I like them. And there's not... Yeah. Go check out Broforce.
So by this time next week, we'll be living in a next generation world.
Oh my god!
Oh,
I feel the future.
Throw away your consoles now because they're crap. Once the PlayStation 4 comes out, there's just
I have no idea what I'm gonna do with those launch interviews. Maybe we'll just put them in next week's free to play. Like the thing I did with the Jumpcast was I just made people listen to them and we like made fun of people. So that might be what's going to happen, or it could just be like a separate Ninja Beard thing. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll keep you updated.
Yep.
And all the hotness and things.
And it's going to be a Sony launch event on Thursday, which I think they're probably announcing a Super Street Fighter 4 port.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, that's all I know about it.
Oh, Emerald's got the inside scoop.
I mean, it's not no, but it's a decent guess. Because they ran some Sony ran some video called Hadouken Cabs, which is about cabs that are driven by Ryu.
Oh, I was going to say, is that like the cash cab?
It's just Ryu driving a cab around town.
Okay, so we've got Ryu driving a cab around. We've got Internet Explorer anime. What's next?
Oculus fucking. You put an Oculus on, you just...
Well, Mark, do I have a product for you?
All right, sweet.
Also, please don't YouTube that. You will not like what you find.
Everyone's YouTubing it right now. Goodbye. Goodbye. Have fun YouTubing that.
Bye.
There's the classic overcompensating comic of like a priest, and it's like, look at the banana, fits perfectly in your hand. It's proof that God exists and loves us. And then the guy just pops in and goes, so does my dong.
Is that what the banana thing was always meant to prove? I thought it was the opposite, like that evolution was a thing.
I don't know.
I don't know, but they always keep saying that. Oh, and God gave you a little pull tab to open it up at the top. It's like you're supposed to open it from the other side.
Yeah.
Supposed to open it from the other end.
Just squeeze the tip and then peel it open.
Just like my penis.